We all know, right? Like, we think about voting, and it's basically just like, well, you pick a name, you mark the box, done.
Yeah, the classic system.
But what if it got like a little more interesting? Like, what if you could actually rank your choices, you know, kind of like making a top three list of candidates?
Has a little bit of strategy to the mix, doesn't it?
It totally does. And that's precisely where today's deep dive takes us. We're going to unpack a really interesting court case, Dudum v. Arntz, which took place right here in San Francisco. Now, this case might not be a household name, but it shines a light on a super important question. How does our legal system find that sweet spot between trying out these new voting methods and, you know, making sure they don't step on our fundamental rights as voters?
That's the core tension, isn't it? Like, how much can you innovate without potentially disenfranchising people or creating unfair advantages?
Right. It's almost like a legal stress test for these new election ideas.
Yeah.
And for our listeners out there, especially those of you thinking about a career in law, you know, Dudum v. Arntz really gives us a great look at how courts weigh these different ways of voting and counting ballots. It highlights like which parts of these systems would probably get the thumbs up legally and which ones might, you know, raise some eyebrows, raise some red flags.
Definitely. And even if you've never heard of ranked choice voting, like by the time we're done here, you'll totally get the legal principles that come into play when election rules are challenged in court. It's like, what are the boundaries, you know, the legal guardrails on messing with these systems?
Totally. Our goal today is to really break down Dudum v. Arntz. You know, we want to look at the arguments, the reasoning behind the court's decision, and basically, like, what does this whole thing tell us about the rules surrounding voting systems that, you know, think outside that traditional single-choice box?
It's like pushing the envelope of how we vote and seeing what the legal system has to say about it.
Exactly. And to get this right, to be accurate, you know, we're mainly using the Ninth Circuit's own opinion on Dudum v. Arntz. And of course, we've got some, you know, some expert analysis to help make sense of it all.
So we're not making this stuff up. It's
Yeah.
straight from the legal horse's mouths.
All right, so let's dive in. So this case all comes down to a system called restricted instant runoff voting, you know, IRV for short. And San Francisco decided to use it for some city elections starting back in 2002. Now, can you give us like a quick rundown? Like, how does this whole IRV thing actually work when you go to vote?
Okay, picture this. You're a voter in San Francisco, right? And under this restricted IRV system, you're not just picking one candidate. You can actually rank up to three candidates.
Ooh, interesting. So it's like your favorite, your second favorite, and your like fallback option.
Yeah, exactly. You've got your first choice, your second, and your third. So they count those initial ballots, but they only look at who everyone picked as their number one, their top choice. If one candidate right off the bat gets more than half of those first place votes, boom, they win. It's a done deal. That part's kind of familiar, right?
Yeah, that first part sounds pretty normal, like a regular election. But then things get a little spicy, don't they? When nobody has that clear majority right away, that's where this whole instant runoff thing it comes into play. So what happens then?
Okay, so buckle up because here's where the fun starts. If nobody snags that majority of first choice votes, they take the candidate with the fewest first place votes and they're out. They're eliminated. And now, get this, the ballots that had that eliminated candidate as their number one choice, they don't just chuck them in the bin. They look at who was the second choice on those ballots, and those votes get redistributed.
That's clever. So, even if your first pick goes down swinging, your vote might still count for your second choice. I like that. But the case is specifically about restricted IRV. And keep mentioning this thing called ballot exhaustion. I don't quite get that part. What does it mean, like, in simple terms? And why did it become, like, the main point of this whole legal fight?
All right, so the restrictive part is what makes this whole thing so tricky because in San Francisco, you could only rank three candidates, right? So there's a chance that your ballot could become like useless. It's what they call
What do
exhausted.
you mean?
Well, let's say your top three choices all get eliminated in those early rounds of counting. Like they're all out of the race, your ballot is done, it doesn't matter anymore. Even if you might have really liked one of the remaining candidates, you know, if you'd had more choices to rank.
I see. It's like your voice gets cut off before the final decision.
Exactly. And that's what Ron Dudum and the other voters who filed this lawsuit, that's what they were arguing. They were saying, hey, this whole ballot exhaustion thing, it's basically like taking away our right to vote fully, you know? They felt like they were being silenced.
Yeah, I can see why they'd be upset. So it's like their vote just stops mattering at a certain point, even if they still have preferences. That sounds like a pretty big deal to bring up in court. So, what were their main legal arguments? What parts of the Constitution did they say were being violated by this whole system?
Okay, so their arguments really boiled down to two main points. First, they said that this limit on ranking only three candidates and this whole ballot exhaustion thing, they said it was messing with their First Amendment rights, especially their freedom of association. Their logic was that, you know, by not letting them rank more candidates, it was like the system was making it harder for them to support and like team up with all the candidates they might have preferred. Right. It was limiting their ability to express their political will.
It's like saying, hey, I want to be part of this political group, but this rule is making it tough. Okay, so that was their first point. What about the second one? What other part of the Constitution do they bring up?
Their second big claim was that this restricted IRV was going against the 14th Amendment, specifically the Equal Protection Clause and the Due Process Clause. They were basically saying that this system was treating some voters unfairly compared to others. Like, their vote didn't carry the same weight because it could get exhausted, while others got to keep having their say as the election went on.
I see. So it's like, hey, our votes should all be equal, right? And the system seems to be tilting the scales. Okay, so they brought up the First Amendment, they brought up the 14th Amendment. Now, I know that courts have a specific way they look at these kinds of challenges to election laws. It's called the Anderson Burdick Test, right? Mm-hmm. Can you break that down for us? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, the Anderson Burdick Test is like the rule book that judges use when they're trying to decide if a state's election law is messing with your right to vote. And it's basically a two-step process.
Okay, let's hear it. Walk us through those two steps.
All right, so step one. The court has to figure out how much the election law is actually hurting your ability to vote the way you want. They call this the character and magnitude of the asserted injury. It's a fancy way of saying, like, how bad is this law actually messing things up for voters?
Got it. So it's like they're measuring how much harder is this rulemaking it for people to vote according to their conscience.
Right. They're looking at the real world impact. Then step two. They weigh that burden against, you know, the state's reasons for having this law in the first place. Like, what's the government's justification for this rule and how important are those reasons?
So it's a balancing act between the voter's right and the state's reasons for the rule. I get it. And I also remember hearing that courts use different levels of what's it called, scrutiny, depending on how much they think the rule is burdening voters. Where does that fit into all this?
Oh, yeah, that's a key part of the whole thing. The amount of scrutiny the court uses depends directly on how badly they think the rule is messing with your voting rights. If they think it's a super serious burden, they use what they call strict scrutiny, which is like the highest level of review. It means the government has to have a really, really good reason for this law, like something absolutely crucial.
Like a really high bar.
Super high. But to be honest, in election law cases, it's not that often that they use strict scrutiny. Usually if they think the burden is, you know, not that big of a deal, they use what's called a less exacting review. It's a lower standard, and the state just has to show that the law has a good reason behind it, you know, like making the elections run smoothly.
Gotcha. So lower burden, lower standard. Okay, so back to Dudum v. Arntz. They've got this Anderson Burdick framework. They have to figure out the burden on voters, weigh it against San Francisco's reasons. So how did they analyze the case? What did they say about how much this restricted IRV was burdening voters?
All right, so the Ninth Circuit decided that, you know, the burden from this restricted IRV, it wasn't a huge deal. They called it minimal, not severe. And their reasoning was pretty straightforward. They said, look, this limit on ranking three candidates, it applies to everyone equally, right? Every single voter is under the same restriction. Nobody gets to rank more candidates than anyone else. So it's a neutral rule.
Right. Everyone's playing by the same rules, at least in that sense. Makes sense. But what about that whole argument about ballot exhaustion being like disenfranchisement? How did the court handle that specific point?
They addressed it head on, and they basically disagreed. They said, okay, even if your ballot becomes useless in later rounds because all your choices got knocked out, it was still counted in the beginning and in those early rounds where your picks were still in the running. So your vote had a chance to make a difference initially. And they also pointed out that nobody got to cast more ballots than anyone else. Everyone had one shot, and everyone could rank their top three.
Okay, so because everyone had the same limit and the initial votes were counted, they thought the burden was minimal, which means they moved on to that second part of the test, right? Weighing that minimal burden against San Francisco's reasons for having this system in the first place. So what were those reasons? And did the court think they were good enough?
San Francisco had a few arguments up their sleeve. One big one was that, you know, if you let people rank a ton of candidates, it could get really confusing. Like, voters might make mistakes on the ballots, and it would be a nightmare to count them all accurately. They were worried about voter confusion and errors.
Yeah, that's a practical concern. Imagine trying to sort through ballots with rankings for, like, 20 candidates.
Yeah.
What else did they say?
They also brought up the fact that their voting machines, back then at least, couldn't handle a huge number of rankings on each ballot. So part of it was just like the technology couldn't keep up. And lastly, they said that, you know, maybe having unlimited rankings could actually lead to people trying to game the system, like ranking unpopular candidates in a certain way to try and manipulate the outcome.
Ah, so they were thinking about strategy too, huh? Okay, so avoiding confusion, the limits of their technology, and trying to prevent manipulation.
Mm.
How did the court view all these reasons?
They basically said, yeah, these are valid points. Like, these are legitimate reasons for the city to have the system. They gave San Francisco the benefit of the doubt. And there's this really important quote from the court's opinion. They said, "The Constitution does not require that governments adopt the best election technology, only that their systems be reasonable and non-discriminatory."
I like that. It's not about perfection. It's about fairness and practicality.
Right. And because they already decided that the burden on voters wasn't that big of a deal, and because San Francisco had these decent reasons for their system, the Ninth Circuit said, okay, we're cool with this. This restricted IRV system is constitutional.
All right, so they gave it the green light. So zooming out a bit, what is this whole case, this Dudum v. Arntz thing, what does it mean for the future of voting? You know, for our listeners out there, does it mean states and cities can just try out any wacky voting method they want?
It's not a free-for-all, but it definitely sets an important precedent. What Dudum v. Arntz tells us is that as long as a new voting system is fair to everyone, doesn't discriminate, and has some practical reasons behind it, it's probably going to be okay in the eyes of the law. It gives jurisdictions some breathing room to experiment with things like ranked choice voting, as long as they're being responsible about it.
It's like a cautious green light for electoral innovation.
Mm-hmm.
But they've got to be careful, right?
For sure. But there's a subtle point here that's important to understand. The court wasn't saying that IRV is the best system ever or that San Francisco's specific version is perfect. They just said it didn't violate the Constitution. There could be other forms of IRV or totally different voting systems that might face different legal challenges.
I see. It's not a blanket endorsement of IRV, just that this particular version passed the test.
Right. And one of the things the court really seemed to focus on was that, you know, running elections is a complicated business. They gave San Francisco some leeway to make decisions about how to do it, as long as those decisions were fair and didn't screw over any particular group of voters.
So reasonableness and fairness, that's the key.
Exactly.
All right, so as we wrap up this deep dive into Dudum v. Arntz, what's the main takeaway for our listeners? What's the big lesson here?
The big lesson is that we're always trying to find that balance between, you know, exploring new ways to make voting work better and making sure that everyone's right to vote is protected. Dudum v. Arntz shows us that new voting systems are usually okay as long as they're fair, make sense practically, and don't step on anyone's fundamental rights, even if they have some limits, like how many candidates you can rank, or they might lead to things like ballot exhaustion in some cases.
It's a reminder that our democracy is constantly evolving, right?
Absolutely.
And it leaves me, and hopefully our listeners, with something to think about. Given what the court said about reasonable and non-discriminatory, how will they look at future challenges to different kinds of ranked choice voting, you know, systems that let you rank more or fewer candidates, or even completely new voting ideas we haven't thought of yet? As technology keeps changing and we learn more about how voters behave, things could get really interesting. Thanks for being here for this deep dive.
It's been a pleasure. It's always fascinating to see how the legal system shapes the way our democracy functions.
Until next time.
See you then.